It's time for Real Money with David Holland. Because David isn't just a radio personality, but also provides financial advice to clients, we must pause for a word from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation. An engagement of services to be offered are only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
Here I am, and welcome to the program. You know, Scott and I were talking before we got started here. We're talking about how we got the start with the radio program that you're listening to. And, you know, I got to give a big shout out, Scott.
Oh.
Yeah. I know it'll be well received. Paul Carpinella,
the former mayor of Daytona Beach,
had me come on and be a guest a little over a year ago on his radio program on WELE 1380. And I said, you know, I could do this. And so here we are. So thank you, Paul.
Thank you, Paul.
Well, let's get right to business.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
So you're all business?
Yeah, all business.
Maybe service sector business, right?
We're going to talk about the service sector. The business day on Monday was really pretty quiet. Lowest volume we've had in a long, long, long time. It's not uncommon for the Monday after the Super Bowl to be really quiet day.
Why is that? Are the traders are all hungover? Or?
Yeah, they were saying a lot of the big institutional level traders, they couldn't get their private jets out of Indianapolis because the airport just isn't equipped for it.
That's very funny.
Yeah, so these guys, you know,
these are the guys all in the boxes.
Yeah, so they drove as fast as they could from the game to the airport or took a helicopter or whatever, and then they all sat on the tarmac until sometimes 2, 3, 4 in the morning.
That's crazy. You know, there's a new business here. We can start. I'll let the folks know that build these big planes. What you do is you build a plane that can hold like 6, 8 of these skyboxes, and you just pick them up wherever they are, load the skybox on the Airbus, and then, you know, have a crane and just take them and drop them where they're supposed to be around the stadium.
That sounds terrific.
You could do that with a helicopter. I don't know.
High cost to entry.
I think. I'm just being silly, but no, that's interesting.
Monday's market closed on its highs. It was not really a terrific day for most of the day, but the Dow ended up down 17 points, S&P basically flat, NASDAQ down 3.5 points. Seeing a lot of weakness in the last couple of weeks in gold, down another $17 today.
Well, were they expecting some bidding up of gold because of the whole Greece thing? And
well, anytime there's fear out there, so we have the Greece thing, we have the Portugal thing, we've got the Syria thing, there's a lot of stuff to be scared of out there. But really, it has been selling off, and not in small chunks. $17 is a 1% move on gold today.
So they were expecting Greece would grease the skids for gold, and it just hasn't happened.
It hadn't happened yet. Greece can't grease the skids for anything. They still, this agreement that I've been telling you about is right around the corner for 2 weeks, is still not agreed upon. They can't get it done. So they have another deadline. They set another deadline to strike the deal. Now, keep in mind that they have a big bailout paying.
Well, that's my question. Isn't it like $170 billion they need by March?
It's $170 billion, 130 billion euros that they have to get all these things through before they'll actually get that money. And German Chancellor Angela Merkel she's getting mad. And she said, hey, let's go here, guys, because you're running out of time. And, you know, at some point, we're going to be okay with you just defaulting if you can't get your act together.
That reminds me so much of a story that I read somewhere about. There was somebody who gave money in one of the big cities and gave the guy that was asking for some money, a panhandler, not allowed to call him beggars anymore, the panhandler. And he asked for money, and the guy gave him a dollar, and he saw the dollar and threw it on the ground and, you know, said something very unkind. So that reminds me of Greece. They've got their hand out. Europe, Germany, is ready to give them the money, but it's almost like it's not good enough, or they can't get their act together. In other words, they can't agree and promise to spend the money wisely.
Yeah, but think of it this way. If we were in the United States, say it was the United States that needed the bailout payment, and we have to get the Congress and the President and the Senate, the Democrats and the Republicans, to all agree that we're going to cut Social Security, we're going to cut government pensions, and it's an electoral system, so you have to get elected back into office. You know, are we going to be able to come to an agreement on that? Forget it.
Hey, can we pretend that we need a bailout and do all those things?
We'd never do it. We'd be in the exact same position. There was virtually no economic news on Monday's market, so there's nothing to talk about there.
Have you worked your way all the way through all the earnings, or is that where you're going?
No, I'm going to get there.
Okay.
In corporate news, speaking of big jets, Boeing declined on Monday after they announced that their brand new 787 Dreamliner.
The Dreamliner?
They just launched this thing, and they're having problems with it already, but they think they can fix it. General Motors said that they are going to raise their profit target to 10%, currently about 6%, so that's a big move there.
That's a lot of money when you say going from 6 to 10.
Yeah, it's a big move.
I mean,
and we're
talking
do that over
billions
about
of dollars.
5 years.
Yeah.
Also, I told you about Micron Technologies CEO who died in the experimental plane accident.
Sad.
They moved very quickly and named their new CEO today, a gentleman from within named Mark Durkin. Looking at earnings, we're about 60% of the way through the earnings season for the last quarter. Been pretty disappointing. A number of earnings that have beaten expectations, a little less than 50%. It's normally about 60%.
Okay, more of what's going on with a continuation of the Fastest Five after this very, very short break.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read. You'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
All right, we need to break it down. Well, we're going to continue some of the Fastest Five because, well, there's just so much to talk about. We couldn't squeeze it into the Fastest Five.
Well, just a handful of things to look forward to coming up later on in the week. Wednesday, we have a 10-year note auction from the Treasury, so we'll see what kind of bid to cover we get there. That's always the interesting part, not so much the yield. And still lots of earnings, CVS Caremark, Time Warner, Cisco, Whole Foods, Visa. On Thursday, we get jobless claims and also earnings from PepsiCo, Rio Tinto, Credit Suisse. Friday, a consumer sentiment number and more earnings from Barclays, among others. So news will pick up a little bit as the week goes.
Well, when you say the bid to cover ratio for the Treasury, so this is our Finglish English segment.
Yeah.
Okay. So everybody's eyes glazed over when you said that. Hopefully nobody's driving when you said that, Scott.
Yeah, come on.
Bid to cover means how many people want the 10-year notes and there's only so many available.
Yeah, so for every dollar that the Treasury borrows,
there might be three times that.
Yeah, normally we like to see a bid to cover about three. That's a pretty strong auction. That means for every dollar they borrow, there's three willing to be lent. That's all bid to cover is.
Well, now, is that a good thing or bad thing? The higher that number, is that good that there's a high number of people wanting, or is it bad?
Well, it depends really on where we are because
it to be low.
Well, it could be seen as a good thing because people still want our credit. They still want to lend us money. It could be seen as a bad thing because it shows people are scared and they're looking for safe.
That's the concern I think that I have is that it shows too much. If let's say it goes from 3 to 5, then that's going to be a big concern.
Yeah, but it's a bigger problem if it goes from 3 to 1.
Right, right.
Then we got a real.
Well, if it goes from below 1, then you've got.
Then you have a failed auction.
Well, then you have a problem with having to raise the interest rates,
yeah.
Or you have to discount the money to basically have a higher yield.
And it tells you the market's lost faith.
Lost faith, or they have decided that they're going to put their money something that could earn more interest.
Yeah, I mean, we're still
safely.
Talking about U.S. Treasuries
right,
here,
we're still talking about an investor be it institutional or individual, that's looking for the ultra-safe investment.
Yeah, I mean, just think about how much investment is done by insurance companies in treasuries. If that money ever went away...
It's billions.
Yeah,
that
we'd
billions
have
of
massive
dollars.
Problems.
Well...
So I like to see bid to cover about 3.
Okay, that's good. What about the service sector? That's a big deal. That seems to be kind of all the... You know, the, it didn't maybe get as much of the headlines as it should.
Yeah, it's a pretty... nerdy type of a number, but you're talking about the ISM number that came out on Friday. Good number there, 56.8, up from a revised 53 in December. What that means is that's a diffusion index. So basically, anything above 50 is showing expansion. Anything below 50 is showing retraction. The further away from 50 you are, the stronger that trend is. The best number within that number that I saw was the employment index, which in December was 49.8, so showing slight contraction. The January number was 57.4.
That's a big jump.
Yeah, that's a really
good
number.
Well, the thing that's funny what you pointed to is the thing that stood out to you. What stood out to me was that the survey's employment index soared to the highest level since February of 06. So that's pretty significant. We're almost, you know, we're in February. I'm like, well, we're almost in February. We're in February, so we've got 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. That's 6 years of the highest number in 6 years. That's got to be positive.
Yeah, that's one of the stronger numbers we've seen in a while. And we've talked at length about how numbers are going in the right direction, but not with the right velocity. That number has got pretty good velocity.
Well, does this translate to better employment numbers? We saw the release of the January unemployment, and it went down. Unemployment is down to under 13 million now. You know, we talked before about it being 13.1 million people.
Yeah.
And we've talked about that's the only number I really care about. And we're going to discuss all these percentages and participation rates, and these people won't really count. I just want to know how many total people are unemployed that want a job, haven't given up. So we're down under 13 million. So the question then is, what are we going to do to continue to stimulate that? It still will take a very long time to whittle that down unless we start boosting up and getting much higher number of jobs being added.
Well, think of it this way. We need to add about 5 million jobs to get back to where we were pre-recession. And so if we're doing that at 200,000 a month...
It's going to take a while.
It's about 10 years.
Okay. Well, that's a good start. I mean, that's getting to the moon, but we want to go to Mars here. I mean, we want to get knocked down as much of that unemployment as we can.
But yes, the ISM number is definitely positive for employment.
Okay. I like that. Well, I've got two good topics I want to talk about. One is China. We'll take a little more time to talk about. Let's take a quick break. Let's go break early, Lisa. And when we get back, I want to talk about Scott's predictions and then a USA Today's predictions for gas, one of Scott's favorite subjects. And then China, what's happening in China and how that affects us, especially as it relates to our neighbor Mexico and, of course, Canada. Stick around.
What if the process of creating your financial plan was easy, hassle-free, and straightforward? What if it was conducted by a friendly professional and there was nothing expected of you in return? It almost sounds too good to be true, right? It's the way David Holland has been doing business at his firm, Holland Financial, for over 15 years. Since day one, it has been David's mission to provide individuals with practical solutions for their retirement needs. Financial planning doesn't have to be complicated or stressful. To learn more about our services, visit us at hollandfinancial.com or call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your complimentary consultation. That number again is 888-747-7526.
All right, we're back. We're continuing our conversation about some of the events in the market and how that affects you directly. And let's get to the most relevant one, I think, that people will recognize, and that's the expectations or predictions about gas prices. We're looking at maybe hitting $4 a gallon this summer.
Yeah, we are not off to a good start. Normally, January is not the highest month, but prices are high right now. Actually, the prices nationwide, the average for a gallon of gasoline is the highest it's ever been in a January. So we're off to not such a great start as far as gas prices.
I'll tell you what concerns me about that. Number one is that the dollar is a lot stronger than it has been.
Yep.
And we're
That's true.
Oil is up a little bit because of some of the unrest. And that was one of the other things I was going to ask you about. Maybe we can tie it directly into gas, and that's about Syria. You know, we're reading, of course, in the papers and on the headlines, Syria has got a lot of strife, I guess to put it mildly. You know, a couple hundred people just got killed, and it's pretty serious business over there. Is that going to have a potential impact our oil and gas prices? Not to be, you know, not to boil this down to a financial impact, but just in terms of our economic impact, what does this look like?
I think Syria is a pretty small provider, so I don't think they'll have a huge
impact. They do less than Libya did, right?
They do less than Libya did. Now, there are economic ramifications to what's going on there. Turkey said that they're not going to ship goods through Syria anymore, so now they've got to go all the way around. It's going to add to prices there, and it certainly hurts the Syrian people. But I don't think really a significant impact on gas and oil.
Okay, so some of the stuff going on with gas then is totally about price of oil, some of the general Mideast tensions.
Yes. Another interesting aspect of oil prices or gas prices being high is that a lot of domestic refiners have switched to diesel. So there's just less supply.
Well, and it seems like just as soon as they get a chance, they take them offline so that they don't produce too much.
Yeah, but really a focus on diesel, and a lot of that is going into trucking companies for in Mexico and Canada, well, as you mentioned.
That's a good segue because we're seeing a lot of interesting activity going on with not only with the insourcing of jobs. There's been a number of companies that have been cited that are going to be moving their operations here. There was a tire company. Let's see if I can find it quickly. There was one that had been doing business overseas, and they were going to pull their operations more back here. And, of course, a lot of
Carlisle,
stuff going—
Is that Carlisle?
Yeah, I think that's who it was.
Yeah,
Carlisle said they could make their tires in Tennessee just as easily as they could over in China. Hey, thank you, Carlisle. Thank you. That's the right direction we need to go.
Yeah, well, you know, I think the tsunami that we had in Japan last year caused a real supply chain problem, and then we had the floods in more southern Asia, which particularly for the tech companies caused a real supply chain problem. And I think China is just more difficult to do business with than Mexico. So we're seeing a lot of goods coming through Mexico that were coming through China. To give you some specifics around that, loaded shipping containers entering Los Angeles and Long Beach were down about 0.2% last year, but trains and trucks coming from Mexico were up almost 9%. So you really can see the shift of how goods are, where goods are coming from in some of those statistics.
It just makes sense logistically, having that closer to home. You know, we can do a lot of business with Mexico and Canada, and you don't have to worry about what may happen halfway around the world that could definitely impair getting stuff here.
Yeah.
And so that's encouraging. I mean, again, of course, the flip side is China is affected because that could have an impact on their growth. And so goes China. So goes a lot of other things.
Yeah.
But, you know, to have it closer to home is definitely an advantage.
Yeah. You know, they're also suffering from something that we suffered from a couple of years ago, which is a real estate boom. So for factory owners to try to build new factories, land is a lot more expensive in China than it was just a couple of years ago. And they have to pass that cost on.
You know, something else going on right now in China, which I thought also was very interesting, is their part of their challenge with their factory workers is their one-child policy.
Yeah.
And also there's a bit of a bias in what you read out there about their culture. There's a heavier male baby preference, I guess, is what you would call it. And so they've got projections out where the number of female Chinese in the country is definitely on the downslope.
Yeah. United Nations says the number of women aged 15 to 24 in China will fall from 106 million in 2010 to 92 million in 2015. That's a very short period of time. So the demographic is definitely shifting.
Wow. That's remarkable. Well, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, I'm going to talk about this issue of low interest rates and how people are trying to adapt and deal with that and what you can think about as an individual investor in planning now and for your future. Stick around. 9 cents. That's it. 9 cents is all it takes to feed a person if you donate wisely. Have you ever been approached on the street or the side of the road by somebody asking for a couple of bucks and thought, where's my money going? Well, when you choose to donate to Halifax Urban Ministries, that same $2 can buy 20 meals and will be used to win the fight against homelessness. I am a proud supporter and I want to encourage you to put your money towards something real. Visit HalifaxUrbanMinistries.org to find out how you can help or call 386-252-0156. 386-252-0156. Okay, so interest rates are low. We all know that. And the problem is that a lot of people that invested in CDs, we've seen interest rates just drop through the floor. Average yield on CDs with a maturity of 3 or more years, back in 2007, it was over 4%. And today, it's down. It's getting real close to 1%.
So, not much.
Yeah, not very much. In fact, it's definitely less than inflation. You know, different numbers are expected for inflation, but look, it's a couple, 3% at least over year, with an occasional fall off or can be a lot higher. So what's going on with investors and how they think about, and what professional money managers, this is really the heart of this, what are professional money managers, the folks that manage investments every day, that's what they do, like Scott Connor, that's what he does.
That's what I do.
And so what do we think about that? What do we think you should do about it? What's the heart of the strategy here? And there are lots of ideas that are being put on the table. One of them, which of course I know, Scott, you're very familiar with, is the idea of buying dividend-paying stocks.
Yeah.
And so plus, minus, what do you think?
It really depends. They're not a bond alternative by even a remote stretch
of the imagination. I think that's what most people get tripped up on, is they think, well, bonds aren't paying much. I even heard that you might not want to own bonds when interest rates start to go up, because you get that inverse correlation thing, which is like a teeter-totter. Interest rates go up, your bonds go down. A lot of people are more aware of that now.
Yeah.
So people are being careful about going into a lot of bonds, but dividend-paying stocks, they don't act like a bond.
Yeah, there is a misconception out there that there is such a thing as a conservative stock portfolio.
Well, they call it a big blue chip, like it's a special thing and it doesn't go down in value.
Yeah, well, I mean, think of the companies that used to be thought of as the widow and orphan type stocks. GE lost half its value.
It went to $5 a share.
Yeah, AT&T, you know, we've seen what's happened with them. AIG was once considered a real solid dividend payer. We saw what happened there. The automakers, you know, so there's nothing wrong with dividend paying stocks, and that yield helps, but they're just another section of a well diversified portfolio.
Wall Street Journal had a great write up and they have a beautiful chart. I love my charts, and so it showed the relationship between a bond portfolio, the Barclays aggregate bond portfolio, so basically a bond index, ladies and gentlemen, and then compared that to dividend stocks as a category, and the two never meet.
Yeah.
They don't travel together. They bump into each other every now and then, but they are not on the same path. So
yeah, the purpose of diversifying is to get things that don't move in lockstep with each other.
Which would be a good example. Dividend paying stocks and bonds do not move together.
That's right. But dividend paying stocks and growth paying stocks
do
move remarkably
similarly. So what that tells you is that dividend paying stocks are not safe from a investment standpoint. So maybe you pick up a 4% or a 3% or maybe a little bit higher yield. You know, you hear people talking about higher yield. Maybe you earn 5-6%, but guess what? The stock can drop in value. If it loses, here's the math. Okay, ready? If it loses 10% value because it goes from $20 a share to $18 a share,
which is a nothing move for a stock.
But you earn 5%. How much have you made?
Nothing.
You've lost 5%. Yeah. Okay. So think about that. Now, if you say, well, yeah, but I'm not going to sell it, I'm just going to buy the stock and hold it forever. Well, let me give you another good example of what can happen. I know firsthand of a person that they have held, I think it was GE. I have to go back and look. I'm pretty sure it was GE. And they have held it forever. And they're getting the dividends off of that. And they said, I'm never going to sell it. Okay, that's fine. Because they want those dividends.
Yeah.
Well, here's the problem. When GE ran into all of its challenges, what did it do with its dividend? It suspended it or reduced it. So just because it pays a dividend, that other thing that you need to know, ladies and gentlemen, is that the dividend is not guaranteed. It's very different than a bond interest payment. You know, all your bond interest payments are twice a year.
Right, which is contractually obligated.
Yeah, they call it the indenture. It's basically the agreement between the bond issuer, which is the company, and its bond holders, which are the creditors.
Yeah, a dividend has to be redeclared by the board quarterly. They can just, at any given quarter, say, not this quarter.
Exactly, but with a bond, they have to pay it.
Right.
Now, of course, if the company goes bankrupt, then they may not be able to, the bond may be, have, bonds can also become worthless, of course.
Right, but you're closer to the front of the line if you're
a
bondholder.
You are definitely, you're two steps ahead of everybody else with a bond versus the common stock, because you've also got preferred stocks that are usually in between. So the reality is that dividend-paying blue chips, or whatever you want to call them, are not a guarantee. All right, come right back. We'll continue. Stay with us.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
All right, we're back, and I've released Scott to get back and check on those portfolios and make sure we're on target to manage all the stuff going on, you know, with the dividend paying stocks and low interest rates, and interest rates, you know, at some point will go up. So there's a concern about what do you do about, you know, buying bonds. I'm not recommending to clients that we load up on long-term bonds. We can certainly have some in the portfolio as part of a, you know, when we talk about diversification, that doesn't just apply to stocks or mutual funds that invest in stocks. That also applies to bonds. And so when you think about investing in bonds, if that's your choice or that's what's been recommended and you're trusting an advisor to tell you that, then bonds have to be diversified because the longer the bond, the more they're impacted by rising interest rates. Now, I want to break something down. You know, we break it down with our Finglish English segment. One of the things I want just to remind you from time to time is I am convinced that financial services, investing, and all of this stuff that we talk about, and there's always a sea of information, I think is made way too complicated way too often. So I'm going to give you, I have a new creation for you. I've got a name for it. It's not really new. I've been talking about this for some time, but I'm going to call it the 5 steps of financial security. Okay. So when it comes to your finances, I've got 5 steps, not 100, not, you know, some nuanced, super detailed process, although the planning can be that way. So here they are. Okay. Number one, 5 steps of financial security. Number one, do you have enough cash emergency money on hand? You know, I talk in my book about the different things you need to consider, and there's all the things you might want to think about in terms of arriving at your number. I don't subscribe to the 3-month or 6-month reserve. I think you need to look at your unique individual situation because everybody's situation is different. So you figure out what that number is. That needs to be set aside. Next up, health insurance. If you are pre-Medicare age, you got to make sure you have enough health insurance. It's so important. And if you are retired, or even if you're getting close to retired, I recommend looking at long-term care because, hey, a couple months in a nursing home or a skilled facility, and you're going to burn through some serious cash. I've known lots of people that have had this firsthand experience, and it's very expensive. And you just don't want to have to do that. And for the cost of a month of long-term care, I mean, you could, for that cost, you can get some really good insurance. And there's other things you can do too. So that's number two, is making sure you got those health insurance and then long-term care. You obviously don't need to have health insurance if you want your Medicare unless you want to supplement. All right, number three, high interest debt. You've got to work that down. If you've got multiple forms of debt, then you want to work on the highest interest stuff first. Not necessarily the highest payment first. Sometimes people say, well, I want to knock out this payment because it's the biggest and then I'll have more money to work with. I've worked with people where we've taken all the different debt they have, and we look at what's got the highest interest. Obviously, you want to make all your minimum payments, but then you pay on the highest interest item first. And when I say high interest, that's a very relative term. Today, high interest is really based on what you could earn on your money if you didn't pay off the debt and you put it into something that would earn money for you. So let me give you an example. Can we go get you 5% guaranteed interest right now in the marketplace with no risk? Nope. I don't know of any. Yeah, maybe there's a dividend out there, but we've already talked about dividend paying stocks and some of those risks. Can I get you a CD paying 5? No. Can I get you a bond paying 5? Maybe, but there's risk. You could default. Is there an annuity paying 5%? No. Okay. So if you've got higher interest, then you want to work that off instead of investing money perhaps. So we want to work off the highest interest rate first, put all of our attention on that beyond the minimum payments. And then as we pay them off, we go to the next lower, the next lower, the next lower payment interest rate. Now, after we've done those things, then we can turn our attention to two of the most important things for retirees and those wanting to be retired: income production and growth for inflation. You next say, how much do I need to put into things that are going to give me income? CDs, bonds, dividend paying stocks, we still may want some, annuities. These different investments or different options or way we can get income. We figure out how much needs to go into that to get the income we need. And then what's left over ladies and gentlemen, is what we need to use for longer term growth to fight inflation. So it should not be the other way around. You don't put all your money into growth and these other things come last. So 5 steps to financial security. There you have it. And we'll talk about it again on a future show. Thank you for being with me.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.